Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
Now, we are delighted to be officially partnering up with the Brain Tumor Charity. It's a cause we care deeply about, and through our specially dedicated podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses, fundraising events and generating awareness, we'll all be moving further and faster to help every single person affected by a brain tumour. For more details on how you can help, just check the link in the podcast description or head to thebraintumourcharity.org. This season, we're delighted to be teaming up with Grid Rival. Now, if your football mates are constantly going on about their fantasy leagues, well, now you can get your own back and create your own racing fantasies thanks to Grid Rival. Including F1 and MotoGP, you can select your own team and drivers, interact with other fans, and join or create your own leagues where you can trade on the go to make sure you have the ultimate lineup for each race. If you're as obsessive about motorsport as we are, make sure you get set up on Grid Rival today. Head to their website, it's gridrival.com, or download their app from your app store. 2021 leagues go live in February, so now is the perfect time to strategize and make sure you get a jump start by downloading the app and getting notified for when they do as the motorsport season begins to ramp up.
Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Now before we introduce today's guest, I need to head south and slightly east to Essex, the land where the first ever hot and cold drinks dispenser was invented in Saffron Walden in 1696 by Henry Winstanley, a notable local inventor who actually is more famous for building the original Eddystone Lighthouse that same year. Mr. Winstanley has a sculpture garden in his honour that still stands today in Piccadilly in London. However, we are not here to talk about interesting dispensers. No, we're here first of all to introduce my co-host and colleague, Harry Benjamin. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You know, this is probably the one podcast where Essex facts have actually some more relevance than they normally do, and we'll reveal that when we introduce our guest.
Yes, indeed. But
apart from that, I'm doing all right. Yeah, I've actually decided to become TikTok famous. Nearly 100,000 views. So
in one post.
Oh, wait. So in one post.
This is
mad,
mental.
Isn't it?
So Harry started doing TikTok, and we share those TikToks on our Instagram Reels, which is a new feature that Instagram have rolled out. And as of time of recording, it has 95,000 views and thousands of comments. So by the time this is released, it'll probably be over 100,000, which is ridiculous for our first ever Instagram Reel. So well
done,
you.
It's the most basic thing as well. I just don't understand it. But hey, if it makes me, I bet that will make me, what, £1.52 probably in profit. But hey,
maybe if you're
every
lucky.
Little helps.
Yeah. Shall I introduce today's guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
So today we're joined by Alex Lynn, who becomes our latest Formula E guest and completes our Mahindra landslide after we also interviewed his Season 7 teammate Alexander Sims and, of course, his new boss, Dilbagh Gill, who did very well, incidentally, in our quiz. He's a man who's excelled in single-seaters and sports cars. He's an endurance racer who can count the famous Le Mans and Nürburgring 24 hours within his ample achievements. He's reached the very top of all-electric racing, competing in Formula E, where he now resides, as we said, with Mahindra. He's a former GP3 champion, winning by a record margin, GP2 multiple race winner, and has the rare pleasure of being a development driver in Formula One for Williams. To top it all off, much like my bearded colleague, he's also from Essex. Alex Lynn, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you very much, guys. And yeah, it's pretty cool. I had two Essex lads on here.
Yeah, it's not. Whereabouts in Essex are you from?
A little town called Dunmo. It's just, I don't know if you know that.
Is that like, I think that's more proper, that's proper Essex. I always feel like I'm in the sort of, I'm in the Towie end of Essex, you know, like Loughton and places like that. That's where I'm.
Yeah. Well, actually, I used to hang out there a lot when I was younger. I went to school in Harlow, of all places. But yeah. Then, not this in Harlow, but no, I had a lot of mates who, like, we hung out in Chigwell, in Loughton and
everything. Oh, yeah, I went to school in Chigwell.
Okay, so what school did you go to?
Chigwell.
Okay.
Oh, mad. Well, there we go. We could talk about Essex, but no, we won't. Well, first of all, we've covered off the where's home, so we've done that. But let's do the lockdown life. It's a question we always ask. Everyone is experiencing, obviously, a bit differently. I suppose you've been able to get out a little bit for Formula E towards the back end of last year, but we're back in another lockdown as we record this. How have you been navigating it all, your end?
I mean, it's all pretty boring, isn't it? Let's be fair. First lockdown, I went back to Essex, went back to see my family. We quickly drove each other up the wall. So I moved back to London, where I currently am now. But like you said, it's a bit weird because we can still go and work in the sim and go to the factory when we need to. I was still able to train in the gym with my trainer, so that's really lucky as well. So in fairness, like most people, you're still allowed to work, just not have any fun, I guess. That's long and short of it.
Yeah, it's pretty rubbish, isn't it, the whole thing? But let's not dwell on blooming coronavirus. Yeah. So let's rewind and go right back to the start. Where did this motorsport bug come from, if you like? Where did it all hinge? Is it in the family? Where did it all start?
I guess the answer is sort of it was in the family. So when I started racing motocross, that was my first love. And my dad did that.
Motocross as in motorbikes.
Yeah. So like proper off-road dirt bike him.
That's Blundell did. Was it Mark Blundell? He did it as well.
Yeah.
And
actually my first dream was to go and race Supercross in America. So when I was really young, that's what I really wanted to do. And then somehow it switched, you know, like it always does. You go to your local go-kart track, try that out. And I think, by some mistake, my dad decided to get me a go-kart for Christmas. It was a second-hand Yamaha zip car. And the rest is history. A lot of years later, we are where we are now.
Logical path from there to Formula E. Yeah, very
good. Yeah.
Oh,
exactly. Well,
so F1 was never on the cards then initially, or, you know, because that's often the aim for a lot of young racing drivers, isn't it? And obviously things like Formula E probably weren't really, didn't exist then. So what was it, F1? When was it F1?
I guess as soon as I started karting, seriously, then it was, you've always got a little bit of a dream of going to F1 when you're in karting. But I think the first time I really thought, okay, I could do this was when I won the British Formula Renault Championship. That was sort of the first thing that thought, okay, this could have a chance here.
And you won by a canter, didn't you? I mean, that was ridiculous. Winning 12 out of 20 race starts. Did you just think, holy crap, this is a piece of cake? This is easy.
that was a pretty cool year. But I guess we were just in a bit of a groove. And it never feels like that, you know. And you say it every single New Year's Eve. It's like this year is the biggest year. And it always is. Next race is always the biggest one. And I guess that won't stop until you retire. But that was a cool year. But that, like I said, that was the first time I really thought, okay, this could be okay.
Bet your parents were thinking, oh God, here we go. This is remortgage the house time, forget the bank balance. This has got disaster written all over it.
Luckily, that day or that year, I got signed up by Mercedes to go to Formula 3. So actually, sort of the success helped out quite a bit. So that helped out quite a lot, really, with the, like you said, those issues. And actually, ever since then, I've managed to stay on a program since then. So that was cool.
And then making your up, you know, making your way up through the ranks, and then you are sort of steadily progressing towards Formula One, going through, you know, we talked about you did Macau as well in 2013, GP3, and absolutely smashed that championship. What was it like winning the title in GP3, and obviously under the eyes of so many important people?
Yes, like you said, actually, those 12 months, I managed to win Macau Grand Prix, sign with Red Bull a week later, and then in that time win GP3. I got my first F1 test as well. So actually, yeah, that was a pretty crazy 12 months. And sort of, I guess, sometimes drivers do go through a little bit of a golden patch when they can't do any wrong. That was sort of my time. And yeah, that was cool. But obviously at that moment, that was like, okay, now you actually at that moment, you believe it's going to happen. Yeah. It's like in no part of you do you think you're not going to go all the way at that moment.
Can you talk to us a bit about how it was being a part of that Red Bull Junior program? Because we've had, you know, way back to when we've had Karun Chandhok on the show, who spoke about his experiences, Brendan Hartley and his sort of turbulent time with Red Bull, in and out. How have you sort of, how did you find your experience with them and their driver management scheme?
I personally loved it. And the reason why was I was in and out in a year. But even though I won my championship, but to be fair, I did understand, because that was the year that, so there's only three of us on the junior team that year. It was me, Carlos Sainz and Pierre Gasly. And that year, me and Carlos both won our respective championships. He won World Series and Pierre finished second in that. So there was a bit of, shall I say, there was a difficult year to be in the junior team. And that year was the year that they signed Max Verstappen to go straight to F1. So I remember where I was when, like, to the day where Helmut called me up and said, yeah, Max Verstappen's going to F1. I was like, okay, well, that is what that is. But actually, in general, what was so cool about Red Bull was, for the first time, you do realise that if you do go and do what you want to do, which was always to win, the chance will open up. And that, you know, there's nothing like, how can I describe it? There's nothing that really lights that fire inside you with knowing that your dreams are fully possible now. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing that really lights that inner desire to go and win quite like that. Yeah. As you know, I was quite a lot younger then. So being a young guy, it's the best feeling in the world, actually. Just every single moment you wake up, it's only dedicated to performance. Your whole life is wrapped around that. And that was a really, really cool time in my life, actually.
It's to Harry's point, I think with Karun, excuse me, he said, when we asked him about it, he was like, well, it's a great program if you perform. It's all you got to do. You just got to perform and you'll be a success with Red Bull. The only people who don't plow forward with Red Bull are the ones who don't perform. It's a very simple formula. So, you know, it kind of makes sense when you think about it. And like you say, you were going through this sort of purple period at the time. The F1 test, tell us about that and how that came about. And also, I've asked a few people this, and it's interesting to get different perspectives on it. What was your emotion or the feelings that you experienced the first time you drove an F1 car?
So that came around. It was in a Lotus. It wasn't actually in a Red Bull car or a Toro Rosso car. So yeah, it was after the GP3 last round in Abu Dhabi. Wrapped up the championship in qualifying. So yeah, we had two good races, nothing, but my head was a bit like, you know, okay, I've done what I needed to do. And then it was Sunday evening, very late in the evening. I got asked, you know, what's your plans over the next 2 days? And I was staying to go and do the GP2 test in Abu Dhabi the next few days, but after the F1 test, and, subsequently got invited, to drive the Lotus for half a day, which was really last minute, wasn't planned. I shared the day with Esteban Ocon. And yeah, I managed to get the night running, which was really cool. And to describe it is, it is as cool as you think. I mean, it's the moment you've been dreaming of, and to get the chance, and everything is so cool. And obviously that year, that Lotus wasn't particularly fast. It was the twin, I guess, Tusk car.
That was
2014.
Matthew Carter era, wasn't it?
Grosjean and Maldonado were the drivers.
Yeah,
I was in Maldonado chassis, I think. But what was really cool? It was a nice moment when you give your initial feedback and you're trying to be really professional. The team's like, okay, so how do you describe the balance? And obviously, the car was that year not a great one. It's mega, and actually. To be fair, it was nice because I think everyone, because I think that they'd had a long year, and I think for someone just to really come and say that was mega, fantastic. I think that was quite a nice way to end that season. Obviously, a great feeling for me as well, and it did feel mega because obviously it's a Formula One car. It's the everything is built to someone's perfection, and it did feel awesome.
It wasn't the end of the road, though, for you and your relationship with F1 just yet, despite also, coming out of the Red Bull program, because you then joined not long after the Williams program and becoming a development driver. Talk to us about your journey to Williams and how you look back at your time there.
Yeah, that was actually a big part of my life, a big part of my career. So I was still technically with Red Bull at the time because we were still umming and ahhing about what's going to happen. Will I stay or not? And then I got the chance to go to Williams. And so I had to ask Helmut. I said, look, I'm going to go. Or is it okay? And he's like, yeah, okay. We had already discussed it. That there was, that was the way it needed to go. So that was, I managed to sign for Williams. And at that moment, they were on a really strong patch. They just finished third in the constructors with the 2014 car. And I think they were looking really seriously, what can we do now with really bringing a young driver on. And I was lucky enough that I got the nod. And actually then for the next 2 years of my life, it fully consumed me. I swiftly left Essex to move to Oxford, got myself a little flat. And almost daily I was in the simulator, traveled to a lot of events, got quite a few track tests in the car, which was really special. That was my real... the time in Formula One where I actually really was immersed, shall I say.
Yeah. And then let's talk Formula E, where we find you now. When did that championship first register on your radar?
Before you answer that, can I just say that I've really pulled out the stocks today, and thanks to Formula E for supplying the free hoodie. Really appreciate that as a commiseration prize for not getting all the way to the end of that bloody talent call. They sent me a Formula E hoodie. So I thought, seeing as we have a Formula E driver for today's show, I thought I better get it out.
Did you get anything else?
Oh, yeah, I got a nice... They could send you a whole goodie box of stuff. You got a little model car, a notebook. Yeah, got a nice... Some hashtag merch. We'll need to do some of that. but speaking of Formula E, they're getting a hell of a hashtag ad out of this. Alex, how's... Yeah, Formula E for you, when did it come on the radar?
That first came on my radar in 2016. I tested for Jaguar. I think that was at the start of season 3 for them.
2016, yeah.
I get confused by their seasons.
Yeah, that's right.
They use both years and the dates.
No, that sounds right.
The first season of Jaguar competing, I was involved in a little bit of testing with them. So that was the first time that that came on my radar.
And did you think that's really cool or that's really crap? Because a lot of people, when it first came around, were like, what on earth is this? Did you think there's an opportunity here? Let's look into this more. What were your first thoughts?
I think most people would be lying if they said they really could see where it is now, when it started. I think in the end, I don't think any of us were clever enough to see where it was going to go, me included. But to be fair, it's rapid rise and the manufacturers involved. I think as a racing driver, you always want to be involved with big manufacturers. Yeah. You want to represent the biggest brands and the coolest brands. And certainly when I got chance to test for Jag, that was obviously a really cool brand, and something that I really wanted to try and do. So from then on, really, I was like, this is a really cool championship. Things are happening here. Yeah, if I got the chance to come here, I would I'd be really happy.
And in 2017, was that the year that you were dovetailing with WEC, with Aston Martin?
Yes.
So how's that for a, I mean, jumping from a Formula E single seater, all electric car into an Aston Martin sports car, how do you manage that? Is that an easy thing for you to do, or is it difficult to jump from one to the other?
I think at the start, I found it actually a little bit tougher than I did in the end, because also they were like two big programs. You know, Aston Martin's a factory program. And then when I was a Virgin, that was, you know, a big operation. So I think it does pull on your own resources, if you know what I mean, you know, your mental resources and your time commitments and stuff. So I think for sure, I had to get used to it. But in terms of driving, that wasn't really an issue because they were like so far apart in driving technique that once you slipped into the other car, you would plug and play, really. For me, the biggest thing getting used to it was just the commitment to being part of two really big racing programs and, yeah, just the mental capacity that has to go into that.
And with Formula E, I mean, you had a pretty good start to your Formula E career, didn't you? When you hopped in the Virgin, it was New York, wasn't it? The doubleheader at New York, and you stuck it on pole. Was that, you know, did you expect that? Because a lot of people you see in Formula E when new drivers come in, you kind of either sink or swim, and it's, they're difficult cars. You've really got to get your head around them to begin with. But you clearly were straight out of the bat on top of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I expected it, but I did expect to be fast because I was lucky enough that we'd done a bit of testing, a lot in the sim, and I'd had like a big preparation because I was a reserve driver for that year. So I'd done a lot of stuff in the background. So I guess I was also very determined to be, to sort of make a surprise, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Like you said, no one really expects that. But I think there was quietly within the Virgin team, we're like, okay, we do actually think we can go and do something. It was a new track for everyone, new location. I'd been quick in testing in the car, so I was like, okay, cool. I think we can do something here. And yeah, I mean, we managed to do that, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Was that the same time that Gasly joined for like a one-off race?
Yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah,
he like he crashed but still managed to finish P4 or something like that.
Yeah, but he was really quick on the second day. Like, I think he went to Super Pole, and I think maybe messed up the Super Pole lap, but it was like purple in the first two. So like, should have been on pole on day two. Like, he was really quick.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the amount of drivers who have either, you know, done seasons or one-off drives in Formula E, it's mad how many have done it, and you know, from all walks of the motorsport world. But then sort of your relationship sort of came to an end, but you managed to bounce back into Formula E at the end of last season with Mahindra, and then obviously dovetailing with other bits as well. How's that been for you coming out of the DS Virgin and then going on?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I've been in and out twice now. I came back in with Jag, and then I'm back in with Mahindra.
you lose track after a while.
Yeah, I'm really trying to stop being the Sam Allardyce of Formula 1. That's really, yeah.
I knew you tested with Jag, and I was like, oh, as I was saying Mahindra, I was like, no, crap, he's definitely raced with someone else as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The Sam Allardyce of Formula E. There is definitely memes in there somewhere. We've got to go.
No, don't start that one, because I'm trying desperately to squash that. No, I mean, I've been trying really hard to come back full time, and it is hard to come in mid season and score good points. But to be fair, both times now with Jag and Mahindra, I managed to do it. So I felt very unlucky actually in the year with Jag. We were on for a really good finish in New York, and car broke down unfortunately. But yeah, now coming back into Mahindra full time, I think now I feel very comfortable to have a really good season. Actually, I think we've got a very strong car. So now.
Yeah.
We want to put everything to practice.
Find that you're definitely Alex and your teammate is Alexander, and there's absolutely no, it can't be called anything else.
I mean, I've called him many things, but.
Well, 'cause one of our briefs when we had Mr. Sims on the show was that he's definitely Alexander. Do not call him Alex.
Okay, yeah, yeah. No, that's definitely where we're at these days.
Yeah.
I feel like Mahindra's got to be our team for season 7, Harry. We've had the full complement on now. We've got both drivers. We've had Dealbag on, who's a serious character. So I think we're definitely going to have to be cheering on the two Brits in season 7. Is it possible, Alex, for you to set any expectations for season 7?
I think honestly in Mahindra we're quietly confident, and I think what I like about myself and Mahindra being together right now is there's a deep hunger from both sides to achieve what we haven't already achieved and believe what we should achieve, and that is to win trophies, to score big points. And yeah, to be honest, we want to be challenging to try and win races. You know, where that leaves us in the championship, I don't know, but certainly I'll be disappointed if we don't pick up a few trophies this year. That honestly is where we want to be fighting and where I do believe we should be.
Yeah. Well, it looks quite promising in pre-season. Were you already friends or knew or had worked with Alexander previously, or is this the first time you've paired up?
No, the first time we'd ever drew, sort of, I did the Nürburgring 24 hours with, he was in BMW and I was in BMW, but he was in Rover Racing, I was in Schnitzer. But to be honest, we've known each other for a while. I raced against each other in Formula 3 and stuff. So yeah, actually we've known of each other for a while. We got on well.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsors, Grid Rival. Grid Rival is an absolute must for any racing fan. I've been looking to join Fantasy Motorsport Leagues for ages, and Grid Rival does that and so much more. With an experience like no other, real-time fantasy games, the best content, and a community of fans, Grid Rival is a must for 2021. Get ready for the motorsport season with Grid Rival today. Fantasy Leagues go live in February, but make sure you head to their website, gridrival.com, or download their app from your app store so you're in pole position for when they do.
And is the relationship, I'm curious about the inter-team relationships between the drivers. Obviously in Formula One, it can be super competitive unless you're Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz. People can butt heads very quickly and very easily. Is it exactly the same in Formula E, or is there it just somehow feels like there's a bit more sharing, a bit more openness between the two drivers? Is that fair to say?
I think even down in karting, you know, you need to be your teammate. I mean, it goes without saying. I think, though, the mark of a good driver pairing is one where it goes without saying, when the helmet's on and the visor's down, you'll do anything to beat each other. Mm. That has to go without saying. But when it's off, you know, we're all old enough and ugly enough to know that without each other working together, we won't get to beat everyone else. So that bit, I think, is the where it needs to come to, because obviously the competition is, of course, you need to beat the other one. That's the first thing.
Would you say that having, you know, coming up through the ranks and worked in Formula One as well, it's always remembered almost as an afterthought that, yes, it's also a team sport. It's not, you know, just about the drivers. Would you say that Formula E actually, more than other motorsport categories, is actually really reliant on being a team more so than perhaps, you know, F1 might be on the face of it?
I do believe so, actually, because you are so reliant on everyone doing their job. But also, there's a large part of when the car starts the race, you are so reliant on the information that other people have loaded into the car. And you really have to trust it 100% of what's gone on. But the only way you do that is by building trust and building friendships even during the season, but also in pre-season, you know, long, long days in the simulator, really gelling as a team and with your race engineer. Because in the end, your race engineer is the team captain. And he's got to try and orchestrate the whole team or your car crew with the best result after the 45 minutes plus one lap. And to do that, it takes so many moving pieces. And at one point, my job is just to drive as fast as I can and to execute what we've talked about. And there's so many people in the background that have to program everything else in the car to do what it should do. I think Formula E is by far the category I've competed in the most, where it's reliant on the whole team working as a complete unit.
And actually, as you've raced, you know, previously in Formula E, as we've alluded to a couple of times on and off, you've experienced both generations of the car, or Gen 1 and Gen 2. First of all, how's that change been for you, having raced both? But also, more importantly, do you miss jumping in and out of the cars halfway through a race?
No, I don't, because I think being quite a bit taller is...
Yes. How tall are you?
6'1".
Oh, that's not... that's hard.
Good height.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal. I don't miss the Gen 1 car. The Gen 2 car is a huge step. It's a proper racing car now, in a sense of it does exactly what you want it to.
They look as well. You know, they look like beasts when you just see a picture of them or anything like that.
Yeah, they look good.
No, it's a proper race car now, the Gen 2. So for me, that was a big step up. And also the enjoyment went up a lot when we... when we got that car as well. That was really cool.
And you mentioned at the top of the show that you've been able to go into the factory a little bit and continue with some sort of normality. Dilbag Gill, he's a hoot. We've had him on the show. He was loads of fun. What's it? Have you had much interaction with him? Has that been possible? And how's it been working with him?
Yeah, I actually just got off the phone with him like a couple of hours ago. We had a nice little chat. No, I've had great fun with Dilbag. I think ever since I joined the team, I was super happy to be here. And I'm very impressed of how, because it's a big team now. Mm. You know, we've got a big factory, big facility. And it's, but it's funny how no matter who you are with in the team, there isn't a day that doesn't end where your jaw isn't, you know, tired because you've been laughing and smiling. You know, everyone's having a good time, obviously, whilst having a deep determination to win. But that's testament to the Dilbag and the team's ethos to instill that, you know, the camaraderie and the friendliness that the team has.
Yeah, he was good value, seemed like a nice chap to work for. Now, we're going to interrupt proceedings because there comes a point in every podcast that we do where we challenge our guests to a little quiz, and actually Dilbag did incredibly well. So I'll hand over to Harry to introduce our very challenging Motormouths quiz. Over to you, our boy.
Yes, Alex Lynn, welcome to Motormouths, the hardest quiz in motorsport because the rules vary depending on how we're feeling and the questions change every single time we have a show. But you should bear reasonably well because all the questions are about or related to you or something you are familiar with. Now, there are 14 points up for grabs. If you get 14 or perhaps half a point more if we're feeling generous, you will go to the top of the leaderboard. But also it means you tie with your teammate, Alexander Sims, and Dilbag Gill. So there's really no point in looking at anybody else on the leaderboard because those are the two you've got to beat and they're at the top of the leaderboard. Okay. So you've really got to pull it out of the bag. Are you ready for your first question?
Of course I am.
Yeah. Your first question is actually a clip that we're going to play you. So have a listen to it and then think about what's going on, what's happening, where and when.
Here we go. Clip number one.
And Lynn is through and there might be contact and it is in a big way. Lynn and Sorokin making contact into the first chicane.
Yeah, thanks guys.
You're welcome for that one. It's number one when you type Alex Lynn into YouTube. So
he now hates
us. What's
us.
Going on there?
And that was me outbreaking myself ever so slightly in Monza 2015.
Correct. Is that one of those moments where you hit the brakes and you just think, oh no, here we go.
What happened there? To be honest, that was one where I was running third all race and it was in the feature race. We made the pit stop and Stoffel van Dorn had already pitted a couple of laps before, so he got a slight undercut on us. But to be fair, we knew that his pace that day wasn't that great. Pierre was in the lead and shooting off into the distance, but he had a drive shaft failure on the pit exit. So then I've made my stop and caught the back of Stoffel, like, really nicely. I think Sorokin maybe got the jump on us as well or something like that. But I felt comfortable with the pace. And I was on the DRS, and I think there was a back marker as well. And I tried to do both of them. And, you know, a situation where you look back and think, how good did you really think you were that day?
I mean, you've described it perfectly there. And the good news is now that that's a full 3 points for you. So it's a very, very strong start. You've beaten Karun Chandhok already.
Poor old Karun.
So, let's move on. It's another clip for you. Have a listen. Same rules apply.
Here we go.
Alex, what can we say? Congratulations. Well done. Brilliant. Well done.
That's all you get.
So who's talking to you and what are they congratulating you about?
Was it Ted Kravitz?
It was. Yes. Correct. There is someone else there as well.
Johnny?
Yes.
Well done.
Correct. And what are they congratulating you about?
I think that was for winning GP3, that one.
Yep, smashed it. Full house. 3 points in the bag. Okay. Now that's the clips done because they've just sort of dried up after that. You're not very vocal on the old team radio.
I know. Yeah,
that's a bit, if you could be a bit more vocal this season, that'd be great because it gets some nice juicy clips for the game. Okay, question three. Now here's where it probably gets a bit difficult. Can you tell us in which positions you finished each of the last six Berlin Formula E races? If you can get half of them, I'll award you 2 out of 3 points.
Generous.
Okay. It was eighth.
Correct.
Was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth.
Correct.
Second to last. Ninth.
Correct.
Correct. Now you're at the point it gets a bit hazy.
11th.
11th, yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Two more.
I want to say 14th and 18th
No, but I'm going to give you 2.5 points. I was missing 12th place and 17th for the first and third.
Okay.
So not too. I'm going to give you 2.5 on that one because that was pretty good recollection. Okay. Now here's another tough one for you.
I like this one.
Can you name every driver who has ever raced for Mahindra in Formula E since season one? Again, if you can get, I'm looking for one, two. I'm looking for 7 drivers. If you can get 4, I'll give you 2 points.
I reckon I can name them. So it starts with Karun and Bruno.
Correct.
Karun and Bruno, yes.
And then Nick Heidfeld.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Bruno stayed, I think.
He did stay. Yeah. He did.
Yeah.
But you don't count him again. So you've got Chandok Senna.
Yeah.
Chandok Senna, Heidfeld.
Oliver Rowland's in there somewhere.
Yes, he is. I thought you wouldn't get that one. Yeah. He had a one-off.
He had a one-off. And then... So then Felix Rosenqvist.
Correct.
Yes.
How many is that?
That's 6.
You're missing 2.
2 more, yeah.
So then Jerome.
Jerome. Yeah. 1 more.
Pascal.
Yeah, there we go.
Full house. That's it. Full 3 points. Doing very well indeed. For a bonus point, though, can you tell me in which season did Mahindra achieve their best championship position of third in the final standings?
Season 3.
He's got it straight out of the back, correct?
Brilliant.
That is one bonus point in the back now.
Right, he
did. Quickly do the math.
Trouble is, half a point makes a massive difference because our leaderboard is so ridiculously long now.
It is. I know. And it's a real shame. It's a real shame, Alex. You know, I'm going to make it 13 because you're from Essex. Because you got 12 points. I'll add an extra one for being from Essex. 13 puts you second just behind your teammate and boss, Dilbag Gill and Alexander Sims. So that's not bad. That's a Mahindra triple row lockout. That's not too shabby.
We'll take it.
That
is a positive sign for the season ahead. Well done, you.
Yep.
Now, listen, outside of our quiz, obviously, is there a particular highlight in your career that really stands out? We've talked about some of your high points and obviously winning GP3 at such a margin and so on, but can you pinpoint one part of your career that really stands out as your most celebrated from a personal perspective?
For me, I think it still is winning Macau in 2013. Just from what it meant for my career and the trajectory it took after that, really did change quite a lot for me.
And can you describe a bit what Macau, you know, what that race is like for someone who may not know it? Because obviously it's a highlight of the race calendar and it's such a unique event.
Yeah, I mean, obviously as a track, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So Macau is a place, for those who don't know, is it's a small island off of mainland China. I believe it's the only place in Asia, or like it's a bit of the Asian version of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I think there's a crazy stat that Macau in its gambling in the casinos turns over like 2 or 3 times what Las Vegas does every year. Like serious money. It's a huge place for basically going there and have a bit of fun. And the circuit is nuts. It's for anyone who hasn't seen it, the circuit's crazy. It's got a really long straight with a couple of kinks, which is pretty easy flat in a Formula 3 car. And then the mountain section, which is exactly what it is. It goes up and down a big mountain in the city, which is very tight and twisty, but super cool. But what makes the race so special is it's the culmination of the Formula 3 year. It's always when, back then, it was the British Championship, the European, the Japanese, the German Championship all came together to race in one field and duke it out to be, I think it's like the Formula 3 World Cup winner, what it was officially called. And yeah, it was just a big blue ribbon race for us. But it was always the one that a lot of people looked at to see who would win that. And yeah, I was lucky that the grid that year was pretty strong with some cool names, and it managed to give me a little bit of 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, it's a great one to have on your CV. It's a mad track, as you say. That's where Sophia Flourish had that horrific, where she flew through the air. Do you remember, Harry? I think she crashed into like a commentary box or something like that. It was an unbelievable crash. And now let's move on to some of our more highbrow questioning, Alex. Any hidden talents? Anything you're particularly good at outside of driving a race car? He's struggling. Look, his
silence is deafening.
He's genuinely struggling.
I like a lot of sport. I do like a lot of sport. Any sport I'd back myself in, to be honest. Actually, other than golf. Golf's not my thing.
What about racket sports? Are you any good at racket sports?
I love a bit of racket sport. I love tennis.
Do you play squash?
I do play squash. It's probably third after badminton and tennis.
I'm gonna put it out there that I need a squash challenge. So any racing drivers, Alex or others, if you're up for a game of squash after lockdown, just look me up. I need a challenge. I back myself at squash. I feel like I reckon I could beat most people who aren't professional at squash. I'm just putting it out there. Just chucking it out. See where that squash ball lands.
No one's going to answer that.
I don't know. I don't back down, really.
You see? These racing drivers, they're a competitive breed, you see?
It's hard not to take it out, to be honest.
I feel a Motormouth video coming on.
Recorded live, yeah.
It's live stream a squash match between me and Alex Lynn, see how we get on.
Actually, you had the football on earlier. Are you an Arsenal supporter?
I am, yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Well, that's 14 points for you then. So you go straight to the top. So you're welcome for that one. Top of the leaderboard, great. Well, carrying on with... So I assume you... Was being a football player ever on the cards?
No, I was never really that good. I mean, to be honest, if you'd have seen me in the school playground, obviously I was Thierry Henry.
Weren't we all?
But yeah, exactly.
Actually, no, I was always in goal.
Thierry Henry.
The 6'5" kid is always going to be the one in goal.
Fair enough.
Now, we've done hidden talents, sort of. What are you awful at? Right, just terrible.
Singing, artistic, anything artistic, drawing, singing, anything like that. Dancing, I feel that is really, I need to really step away from the dance floor.
Step away from the
Not
dance
Not going to see you on Strictly anytime soon.
God, no, that is... No, I'd embarrass myself in front of that.
I've got to ask this one because it went down so, frankly, brilliantly with one of our last guests. If you were an animal, what would you be and why? And the only reason I'm bringing this question out again is because... We had it with one of our previous guests, and it turned out she would be a cow because, as Harry enlightened me, they sort of become attached to you and you can cuddle them and lie down with them and have a little snuggle. Is there a particular animal you would see yourself as? I like that you're thinking about this, by the way.
Now, contractually, you're not allowed to say jaguar, I presume. So,
imagine that. That's so funny. That would be so... If a jaguar driver came, that would be terrible.
Yeah.
My favourite animal is an orangutan.
Oh, very good. Very good. Orangutan. Have you ever met one in real life, in Borneo or something like that?
I tell you what, it's a bit of a dream of mine to go see them in Borneo. I sponsored one in Colchester Zoo.
Well done. Very admirable.
For a while.
Well done. Yep. They are cool creatures. And that Borneo is the place to go and see them. I think it's called Sepalok or something like that. There's an orangutan sanctuary. And it is amazing. I went there years ago.
Did you?
I did, yeah. It is actually amazing. But the only thing is with it that it's... you sort of think you're going into the jungle, which you are, but it is very much a tourist attraction. You know, they're kind of wild, but not really. But still, they are amazing creatures to see. They're freaking huge. But that's a good one. I like that one. We've had a cow and an orangutan. That's superb. Slightly more serious question for you. Any hero? Who was your hero growing up? Was it a racing driver? Was it someone else? Was it someone in your family? Did you have someone that you really idolized?
I would say the two people I did was my father and Michael Schumacher in a racing sense. For me, I think people in my generation, or young drivers in my generation would probably say Michael, because I think when we were growing up. He was dominating everything. But for me, it was that the way he dominated. It was just, there was something so cool about his ruthlessness and, you know, never giving up. And for me, that was something that I really loved watching. So I'd say those two, my dad and Michael Schumacher.
Nice. Very awesome. Nice. Now, we end all of our shows with the final three questions that we ask to all our guests. It's just quite nice to see how everybody answers. So shall I kick off, Tim, or do you want to take
Go for it.
So, Alex, what's got you excited at this very moment in time?
Formula E. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, that is really exciting. I mean, obviously, given everything that's going on, I feel very lucky that I'm someone who has really just got a goal in mind and can just focus on something, given all of the noise that goes on around us. I do feel really excited about that. And I do realize I'm lucky to have that such a focus and something so cool to be able to focus on.
Yeah, no, good answer. And it's hugely exciting. If not doing what you're doing, what do you think you would be doing?
I do believe I'd love to be involved in sport in any way. I was never really that good at school or didn't listen really at school. So from my side, it needed to try and be sport involved. But I think as time has gone on, I've really enjoyed the intricacies of how a team works. On what role that would be going forward, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was going to throw in just one more thing there. With when it comes to retirement, and I appreciate that's a long way off for you still, but have you thought what the long term might look like? Do you have any sort of business aspirations?
I do. I feel like I'd keep them a bit secret before I get anywhere near, because I feel like once you say it, it's a bit like, oh, I don't know, because like you said, I feel so far away from it.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I'd struggle to step away from a competitive environment, or certainly a cutthroat business, a bit like racing is or sport is in general. So yeah, from that side, I've noticed in myself that I don't want to lose that element of my, I love that part of my life, waking up every morning feeling so motivated.
Yeah,
that's something I really like.
Well, if you've got a business idea, Tom Blomqvist is looking to invest, so I'd hit him up. We had him on the last show, and he said in his spare time he likes to invest in things.
Why have we not tapped him up yet? We need the money.
Tap him up. Send him a deck and see what he says.
Yeah, I will.
Why don't I see his logo in the corner?
This was the sponsor read. So just, we want to say thanks to Tom Blomqvist and everybody at the Blomqvist Association. Okay, final question for you though, Alex. What are you scared of?
I am scared of not maximising everything that I have. I think that is like a bit to sort of harp on from what I said earlier. I think I really want to maximize the career I've been given and the chances I've been given. So in the immediate future, I wouldn't say it's probably scared of not maximizing the season I've got ahead of me. Yeah. It's something I really feel very motivated to make sure I nail it, actually. That's about it.
Yeah.
Well, we're so excited to see how you get on this season with Mahindra, full season under your belt as well, and with a great, you know, big team now, as you say, and these new cars, it's going to look absolutely amazing. And it's great to have another Essex lad on the show as well. So, Alex Flynn, thank you so much for coming onto the Motormouth podcast.
Cheers, Alex.
Thanks so much, guys. It's been really fun.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out the team at Garuda Rival, the place to be for the 2021 motorsport season. If you think you really know your F1 and MotoGP, fancy yourself and making a bit of extra cash, setting up your own or joining a fantasy league, and making sure you have the best driver lineups for each race, all whilst getting access to the best motorsport content and chatting to like-minded fans, then Grid Rival is the place for you. Leagues go live at the end of February, so make sure you're at the front of the queue by getting notified as soon as they're ready by heading over to their website, gridrival.com, or download their app from your selected app store and get prepped for a brand new season of motorsport with Grid Rival. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_
underscore, Instagram at Motormouth underscore official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.